The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
Making Aliyah is a stressful process. Where should you live? How will you earn an income? Are you really going to leave everything you're used to move to a different country? And then there are the kids. How will they adjust? Will they have a support system? Do they know enough Hebrew? Do I know enough Hebrew? All of these questions and more tend to pop up when someone makes the decision to make Aliyah. But we thought we would look at it from a different angle, because this week on the Jewish Living Podcast, we look into what it takes to make Aliyah after retirement. No kids to worry about, the income has already been made, but a whole new slew of considerations arise. And with me to do that are this week's guests.
Hi, I'm Bernie Kesselman. I am a retired attorney and a current author.
Hi, I'm Shelley Kesselman. I was an echo tech when I was working for a cardiologist. Since then, we're now living both in Israel and in America and enjoying the grandchildren.
The Kesselmans will be going through their Aliyah experience and share some of their observations for anyone thinking of making Aliyah at a later stage in life. Oh, and we'll talk to Bernie Kesselman about his new book as well. Bernie and Shelley Kesselman, thank you so much for joining me this week. I know that we've tried doing this before. This is actually the first time we're doing this, where we've actually recorded this episode before, but the recording didn't come out so well, so we're redoing it. And thank you for making time for me not only once, but twice.
Thank you very much for having us. It's a privilege to be here.
All right. So I'm just going to jump into it. The reason that we have you guys on this week is to talk about making Aliyah after you've retired. So we've had episodes on here in the past about what goes into making Aliyah. A lot of that was focused around things like careers, things like what to do with your kids, how do your kids adjust, things like that. We wanted to do a separate episode for people who wanted to make Aliyah in their post-retirement years. They no longer have to worry about what to do with their kids. They don't have to worry about what they do for a job. But there are differences for those people who want to make Aliyah later on in life, but they have maybe different areas that they need to worry about. And that's why we invited you on, because I know you guys recently made Aliyah. And now that you're maybe a year plus into it, maybe we can get some of your feedback as to what you think you could have done differently, what you liked about it, what you didn't like about it. And I'd like to hear, first of all, before we get into anything, what are your thoughts overall on the Aliyah process?
Well, I have to say that we absolutely love it. We made Aliyah, as I mentioned, about a year and a half ago. It wasn't that difficult. There are a number of organizations that really help us. The one we used was...
Nefesh B'Nefesh, who were phenomenal. They walked us through every step of the way. It can be intimidating because there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of forms, and a lot of faxing and PDFs, which we are totally ignorant about, but they were able to help us in a way that it was quite manageable and really was not a problem.
My wife is not so ignorant on computers. I am, absolutely, and she did most of the forms and whatnot, but it really wasn't a bad process. In fact, I wanted to make Aliyah for 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And I've been trying to convince my wife to do so. My brother moved about 40 years ago, and I've been trying ever since. But when, you know, with the kids and with a number of different, you know, work, of course, I was working as an attorney. It wasn't that easy in those days. Now, you know, our kids are married, thank God, and happily raising beautiful children. And three of my children made Aliyah before us, which helped a lot. When they moved, my argument with my wife was in better shape. Here's what wife shall tell you.
Now, one of my concerns was not so much what we would do, because that we managed to fill our time very well. I was not ready to leave the comforts of America, my conveniences, my independence, and go where I was not so comfortable driving by myself, speaking Hebrew, although I'm comfortable in understanding. My speaking skills were less. But it worked out. And I think it's a process that you have to be prepared for certain changes, and you don't find everything in the supermarket that you think you're going to find. But those are little sacrifices or little trials that are easily overcome. So all in all, we're thrilled that we did it.
Our children made Aliyah, you know, when their children were young, at different ages, actually. My oldest son, he had some children in teenage years and younger. My other son and my daughter had much younger children. But it worked out great for them, and they're very happy, and all the children are very happy to be there. To me, it's biblical. I always wanted to be there besides my brother and my children now there. But one of my first days in Israel is at the shul, davening outside because of COVID, and I saw two IDF fighter planes pass by, and then clouds passed overhead, and the sun started to rise. It was chakras time, and it was just a beautiful scene in my mind.
All right, so we're going to get to a lot of different things that you just touched on. I want to start with the fact that you have children in Eretz Yisrael. You also have children still in America, but you do have children currently living in Eretz Yisrael. Now, that is already, as you mentioned, an advantage for somebody who is making Aliyah, to have family there. We've spoken to people in other situations that have made Aliyah, and it's a lot easier, obviously, if you have family that you can rely on that's there to help you at least get adjusted, and obviously in the younger people's case, if they have parents that are there, it's easy with the kids. My question for you, though, is do you have friends there that made Aliyah basically by themselves with no necessarily close family that's there, and have they had to adjust in any sort of way, or do you see how that could be more challenging and what somebody who is in that boat could do about it?
We have friends that made Aliyah well before us with their kids young, much younger, and they basically adjusted, I think, fairly easily. They had some difficulties. Some friends first moved into an area that was too Haredi for them, and they are more like middle of the road, and they moved to a new area and they were happier. Other friends moved to an apartment in the middle of Yerushalayim, and they haven't moved from there. They love it there, and they raise their family there. Our children, you know, have, as I mentioned, children of different ages, some had more adjustment than others, but they all adjusted beautifully. I think if you have a united family and everybody's with you, and it's easily done, although it is much easier when you're retired.
But what I found is that our kids, of our children, the first one that went, really went, and they had nobody in terms of family. And they themselves admit that their friends became like family. They met people through the schools that their children were in the same grades as other families. And those families became as if they were friends. Since then, siblings came, we came, their other set of parents came. So it definitely is a huge, huge advantage to have, whichever generation you're in, as a parent to a child, or a child to a sibling, or to a parent, to have that support system. Because there are a lot of things that can be overwhelming, that when you have somebody that you can really be comfortable with, it really helps. We socially have met a few people our age and stage, but I would say predominantly at this point, mostly with our family, and we're fine with that.
Yeah, although there's a lot of political quagmire, not political, but bureaucratic quagmire in Israel, and everybody recognizes and sees it, our children, and we live in Efrat, and the people there were very, very helpful in helping us through a lot of this. And we also found that when you get through with some of this, the setup in Israel is made to help new immigrants, which we are. Can't believe I'm an immigrant, but new immigrants that we are. That besides all of the, they give you stipends when you land. They give you health insurance. They give you a lot of things that are helpful to you. But they also give you ulpan for free, which
I was going to ask you about your Hebrew. How's your Hebrew?
My Hebrew is terrible. My wife is much better. I call it pre-nursery, but they call it Ulpan Aleph. And my wife started in Beis, and then I advanced to Aleph Plus, and she's in Gimel.
If you're Israeli now, you can't call it Beis anymore. It's Bet.
Bet, right. I still haven't learned that. Aleph Plus. But my wife really knows it fairly well. We did construction in our house. I wanted the house to be exactly like my wife loves it, and that makes her even happier there. And our sons, our kids, all our kids really helped us do the construction. They knew who to talk to as well. And it was, you know, and but my wife was able to converse with Arab workers who my kids recommended, who speak Arabic or Hebrew. And my wife spoke Hebrew fairly well, although she wouldn't admit it.
But there were challenges. You know, to think that there's nothing that comes up, I think, is naive. But you learn to accept those challenges. The first time we went to the bank and we had to open up an account, we were totally, totally unfamiliar with the system there. And there was one time I went over to, we had to pick up a credit card. We were so happy we finally got the card. And I went in to the clerk, who had a sign in front of her desk that said that she wasn't working. And I said, well, that's, you know, I'm speaking in my best official Hebrew. And I said to her, but you're here. Why can't you get me the card? Just because I'm not working now. And 5 minutes later, my husband, who does not speak a word of Hebrew, came in and spoke to her in perfect English and said, we're here to get the cards and we want them now. And all of a sudden, she understood everything and she gave him the cards. So, you know, it's a process.
So I wanted to ask you about that. Things that, so when people think of making Aliyah, they have a certain ideas of what to expect and what to not expect, but I wanted to get these types of stories from you, things that you might not realize, either for the good or for the bad.
Right.
And I'm not here to ask you to convince people to make Aliyah or to dissuade people from making Aliyah. What I'm asking is for things that you might have come across in the first year or so of you living there that you didn't necessarily anticipate and that people don't really tell you about. It's something that you have to kind of experience for yourself. But now I'm asking you that you've experienced it. Can you tell us about those things that you didn't necessarily expect to show up?
So there were a lot of those kinds of things. We had to get driver's licenses because in Israel, when we made Aliyah, the only thing you needed to do was have an eye test. And, you know, we didn't know where to go, and nobody tells you where to go. And finally, we found the place. So the day that we got our licenses, we actually did a dance in the street because it worked.
It's funny. I know somebody who had to do this in England. He moved to England, and he had to get their whole driver's test. He had to relearn how to drive because you're on the exact opposite side of the street. Everything is very different. You don't make a left into the further lane. You make a left. That left is like the right here.
Yes.
So, but I'm assuming that driving, there are differences in Israel, but we probably know about those things. What are more of the things that you didn't necessarily anticipate?
Well, even dealing with the day-to-day, it's so different. I mean, you go into a food market with my wife, and I go and she is able to read everything. I can't. I'm not sure what these things are, what they mean. She explains everything to me. But I have to say, having people there that you can rely upon is very helpful. My kids, of course. And in a frat, we were in a frat, the people there are very, very helpful. And they have an organization that helps new immigrants, and they're really on top of things for you. And it really does help a lot. With respect to the driver's license, I think you keep trying. And we finally, I kept calling and I emailing, and I finally got a young lady whose name I forgot. And she was great. She was so helpful, opposite of what we had first gotten when we tried to contact the Motor Vehicle Bureau. And she was great, and she saw us through the whole process and really got it expedited for us.
Then, of course, there was a time that you had to go to the doctor, and we didn't know the difference between a hafnaya and a hitchayvut. And
tell us.
So in Israel, it's a little different than it is here. First, you have to go to the doctor, and you have to get, I guess, what we would call a referral. And with that referral, then you have to go to the insurance company and get a form that says they will be responsible to pay for it. Now, it's not a system that we're used to at all here. And I can't tell you how many times we go to the office and we forgot this paper or that paper, and we're calling them up, can you fax it to us? And they speak Russian and they don't speak English. It works out, but you can end up going 2 or 3 times to the same place till you figure it out.
So it's funny because you're actually talking to someone. I have a master's in public health, and part of one of my classes, I had to analyze the different health systems in different countries, and many countries, especially ones that have their health system controlled by the government, you have these gatekeepers that you have to go through a certain order of things.
I call them a few other things.
I'm sure you do. But that's what you get with a socialized medicine country. A lot of people, a lot of Americans will not realize that until they need to use a doctor. That's a good point.
That's an important point. That's one thing that I really disliked in Israel. It was a socialized medicine. I mean, the first thing we learned, and thankfully, again, we had our children teach us this, but you have to get a good insurance policy as best you can. But the socialized medicine is maddening sometimes. You know, I think you have to either know someone that can move you up the chain so you don't have to wait so long, or you have to pay for it. Knowing someone is better, because paying for some of these people might be very expensive. But that was upsetting. I tried, you know, I had to have a procedure one time, and I had to go to the emergency room, and my son Moshe said, don't go anywhere until I call people I know. My other son, Dov, drove me in the emergency room, called my son Moshe, and he said, yeah, it's all set up. And when I walked in, the emergency room person said, you have to go here, then wait in line here, and then wait in line over there. And I said, no, I was supposed to see Dr. So-and-so, who happened to be the head of the emergency room. And they said, oh, come right in. And it was a nice feeling for me. But if I had to go through that procedure, that would have been terrible.
It's funny. We have this the concept of it's not what you know, it's who you know. Yeah. The problem is, I feel like in Israel, everybody knows someone. Yeah, everybody's always going to know someone.
Yeah, and it's important to use it. It's very important to use it. Don't say, I want to wait my line. Yeah, nobody does that. Everybody uses who they know, and you have to use that.
Right.
I called up one time, and whatever the appointment was for us was for some specialist. And they said, oh, yes, you can certainly get an appointment. So I figured, okay, we've gotten over this first hurdle. The appointment was in 3 months. And I said, okay, there's got to be a better way.
I've spoken to so many, and not just like Jews who made Aliyah, but everybody who moves to a different country and they have a different medical form. This is the first thing that people remark about, how different the medical system is there. In many ways, it's a lot easier for someone from, let's say, England or South Africa or France to move to Israel just based on the medical system alone, because it's more similar to those countries that have the federal government dealing with the medical system.
Yeah, but they have really great doctors there. You have to get to them. And most of the great doctors I've spoken to were trained in the United States. But to get to them is not easy. As Shelley says, I had to have a MRI, and they said, okay, come back. It was 3 or 4 or 5 months. I forget the amount, but it was crazy. And then Moshe called somebody he knows who knows everybody at the hospital, and suddenly it was next week.
So, yeah. So I want to move on to a different area, and you briefly mentioned it earlier. In America, we have our kind of vision as to what people do in retirement. What do people in retirement do in Israel with their time?
So I guess it would depend pretty much on what your interests are. I personally love, there are shiurim, we live in Efrat, so there's shiurim that you can go to a top quality. So I enjoy doing that. It took me a while, but I just started going to a gym because I was not comfortable going and not understanding the language. But I said, you know, if worse comes to worse, I'll drop the ball or whatever. I'll be one step behind everybody else.
You have to make sure you know that you're looking at kilo instead of pounds.
Right. Also on the treadmill, kilometers instead of miles.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, so the same type of things. We also spend a lot more time meeting friends, going out for lunch or for, you know, it's a very relaxed, pleasant lifestyle.
All right, so Efrat, I'll let you plug one place. What's your go-to place to grab something to eat with your friends?
In Efrat?
Or anywhere.
So usually we go to, there's so many places.
I know, you got one shot. You get
one shot.
Millions of people listen to this podcast every week. Why are you laughing? so people are going to hear this.
We end up
Ramon?
Going, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
People have heard of that one.
I like Rose's Steakhouse. And right near Efrat in Gush Etzion. And also there's a Rose's in Yerushalayim. But there's so many. That's one thing about Israel. The food is great. That's my big problem, is to not eat out so much, stop gaining so much weight, because the food is really great. Then they have places we went What was that spa we went to? The Carmel Spa.
Oh, classic. Every American loves the Carmel Spa.
You can't stop eating there. But everybody eats out. It's like crazy. Yeah. Nobody,
because you can. Because in America, you're limited to the handful of restaurants in your area or the ones that you know about. But in Israel, there's really not that many limitations.
And everything's kosher, which is great.
Right.
At least in Jerusalem.
I had to ask about this because in the Northeast, when people retire, they basically have two options. They either make Aliyah or they move to Florida. Was Florida ever a consideration? And if so, why did it lose?
Not for me. I don't think for Shelley either. Florida lost for a number of reasons. Because one, we have kids in Israel.
Okay.
Number two, I think it's biblical. I think we have a chance in our lifetime to do something that Jews for thousands of years cried for and thought it was impossible. It was impossible. And we have the opportunity in our lifetime to really live in the Holy Land. And as I said before, I look around, I talk about what we do. I like to walk around sometimes and just look around. Everything is so biblical to me. It's so beautiful to have the opportunity to be there. And that's why there was really not a choice to me.
Yeah, although Bernie certainly was the one to push us more to spend more time and to make Aliyah, there is a, which I would have never admitted to or felt before when we used to visit frequently, but there is a qualitative difference in how you feel as a Jew walking around in Yerushalayim versus how you feel in any city in New York. And that includes, you know, Borough Park and Far Rockaway and all of these other places. You feel like you belong. The gardener is Jewish. The guy that cuts your hair is wishing you a good Shabbos. It surrounds you, and that's a wonderful feeling.
It's funny you mention that. My father is actually a retired landscaper.
Oh, really?
Yes.
See, well, I know we wouldn't have had to make Aliyah.
I'll tell you a funny story about exactly what you're saying. My father was hired by a company in Williamsburg to plant trees. I know, right? Trees in Brooklyn. It's weird. I know there's a whole book about it. But he's hired to, if you're ever walking on certain streets in Brooklyn and there's trees like lining the sidewalks, my father, good chance he planted those. But he shows up in his jeans and his flannel jacket. It was late in the season. And these little kids come running out to watch, like, oh, this is like a cool thing. It's not every day you see a tree planted outside of my apartment building. And they run over to him and he looks at them. He's like, what Gemara are you learning? Like, what? Does this guy know anything? Yeah, my son's in yeshiva. I know everything. So, but I guess it's less of a surprise when that happens in Israel.
So you see Hasidim on bikes with the payas flying. It's just that it's not the norm. Not the norm for here,
right?
Where we are, and it's a great feeling. It really is.
So before I move on to the second part of our discussion, which will unfortunately not include you, Shelley, but is there anything else that you want to let the audience know about making Aliyah specifically after retirement?
I think if anybody's on the fence about doing it, they should definitely do it. I think the challenges are overcomable, and they... When we decided to go, I felt that a person has an opportunity in their lifetime to do certain things. And as you get to retirement age, you realize that those opportunities don't last forever. And it's better to go when you're young enough and healthy enough and strong enough to do the things that you envision doing in your retirement there.
All right. So we're going to move on to the next part of the conversation. Shelley, you are dismissed. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm going to visit us in Israel now.
All right. So let's get into Point of Honor. This is your first novel. Now, first of all, what possessed you to start writing a novel? Is this something that you've always wanted to do, or is it something you
I've always wanted to write a novel. I've read many novels by many different authors, and I always wanted to write myself. I never had time as an attorney. I worked for a number of securities firms, very busy. I started writing many years ago, and I just I couldn't complete it. When I finally retired, I had the time to finish it, and I spent that time and finished it. And my son Dov in Israel, and his son, my grandson Uri, spent a lot of time editing it and putting it in book form and computer form for Amazon. Because I could not do that. I had no clue, as I mentioned, of how to do the computer. and got it published. And thankfully, there were a lot of good reviewers. People really liked it. I'm very happy about that.
So let's first go with this. Somebody out there who's looking for a book, if you had to compare this to the style of somebody else, who would, if somebody else liked a specific author, what author would they like that might draw them to this, to Point of Honor?
Well, I think it's a conglomerate of many authors. I read Clive Cussler, I read Ludlum, I read a number of Dan Brown. I read a number of different books, and I like each. But I wanted to have something where it's not an unusual person who's the hero. A good family man with good ethics and morality who gets put into a situation where he has to step up and really fight to save what he thinks is important in his life, his family and whatnot. And so I tried to put everything that I've read into one book that has a person that is a normal person and stands out. And I also wanted a book that the hero, the true hero, not only survives, but does well and a good ending, which I wanted.
All right, well, we're not going to give away too much here.
Too much.
But it's a good ending. You like
yes,
the ending.
I like the ending. Yeah.
All right. So how long was this story percolating in your mind?
Years.
Years.
I mean, I was writing it for years, went back, changed a few things. I had a friend here in West Hempstead before I moved, edited. She was very good. But then when I finally finished it, I was really writing a lot in Israel. When I had the time, and when I finished it, then I wanted to publish it. And my kids, my son and grandson, were really great in doing that for me.
Okay, and you described it as a political thriller.
It's a political thriller.
What is a political thriller?
Basically, the gist of it is there's a international conspiracy to illegally take over the presidency of the United States.
Okay.
And this is before, way well before what's going on these days, you know, with all the allegations and stuff. But, the current president happens to be a good guy, and the person who gets thrust into it is a normal. He's a lawyer. Maybe I thought of my son Dove, but he's a lawyer.
You seem to have a lot of lawyers in your family.
Yeah, well, I'm a lawyer. My son, and that's it. But he sees a woman being attacked in the streets of Manhattan, and doesn't think twice. He steps up to help save her, and that was a point of honor for himself. And he got thrust into a conspiracy. And he had to fight to protect his wife and his children and his family and everything he holds dear. And that's the genesis of the book where it started.
All right. So we're not going to get into the plot because I want people to be able to read it.
Right.
Hey, let's jump to like the last 20 pages and then you can read from there. No, I'm not going to do that. But I do want to know where can people get it and if you guys are on any social media platforms that people could find out more.
Yeah, it's published by Amazon, so you just have to go into Amazon and put in a Point of Honor, Bernard A. Kesselman, and it'll come up. And it has all the reviews. People who read it, and I'm very happy with reviews. It's worth reading. And in the Amazon discussion of it, it has the plot, the entire plot.
All right. The book also has the whole plot.
Yeah, read the book, you get the plot, but the book has a lot of intricacies and, you know, back and forth like a Ludlum or a Grisham. I found it, you know, really great to read, and I was very satisfied that people who read it really loved it. And
right.
Look at the reviews if you go into Amazon.
So the book is called Point of Honor, Bernard A. Kesselman.
A Point of Honor.
A Point of Honor.
Right.
A Point of Honor.
Right.
And it's got a picture of a silhouette of a man looking out into the distance with an American flag
over the
top cover.
Yeah, I'm very patriotic. I mean, I love the country, our country, Israel, and our country, United States. And we have two countries now, we're citizens of both. And I love the United States, and it's always been great for Jewish people and all people, really. And I wanted this person, the hero, who is not Jewish, but a patriot, stand tall, which he does, and help his family and step up to the problems that he encountered.
All right. And we will, of course, link to that information in the show notes And you can find the links also in our social medias as well. Mr. Bernard Kesselman, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you so much for having me.
My thanks to Bernie and Shelley Kesselman for joining me this week. If you're interested in another episode about Making Aliyah, I recommend going all the way back to episode 2 of our show, Making Aliyah, An Insider's Guide with Ellie and Dina Kamiansky, where we interviewed another couple who had just made Aliyah. Until next time, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.